Hello, readers, and welcome to a special Tachi-Eye podcast. Bruce, sitting here in the lovely United States, and joining me is our amazing man from foreign lands, once again sitting in a sumo venue. It's Josh. Say hello, Josh.
Hi, how are you doing, Bruce?
I am delighted to be speaking to you early in the morning, late at night, your time, about, so you're in Fukuoka.
I'm in Fukuoka. I'm in a yatai. No, I'm not. I'm in an Airbnb. Sitting on a tatami mat, stretching out my muscles, getting into some hot sumo chat.
Good heavens. So, actually, your arrival in Japan was rather eventful. Why don't you tell our readers a little bit about what happened to you?
Yeah. I've been on an airplane for probably much of the preceding 48 hours. I was doing your old favorite route, the Island Hopper, which if our readers and listeners and viewers don't know, it's this crazy old essential air service route that I talked a little bit about on the site, but it connects all these islands across the Pacific and, you know, military base, and like it gets groceries delivered to and mail delivered to various islands and stuff like that. And it's a really unique experience, and it's not something that like any sane person would ever do. But you know, like willingly, unless they're, you know what I mean? Like, unless they're like, you know, have a meeting or whatever on one of these islands. But, you know, so I did that. It was kind of a cool bucket list experience. I got to see all these places. And so after a couple of days of traveling, I landed Fukuoka, and less than a minute after I get into the terminal, I get chased down by a camera crew from TV Tokyo who have this show called Why Did You Come to Japan? And they interviewed me in the terminal, and it was one of those things where, you know, if I'd had the presence of mind to like understand what exactly the show was and what was at stake, I found out later that apparently the show, if they think that you're interesting enough, which I clearly didn't, you know, they make plans like follow you around Japan on your trip. So they did not do that, but they did interrogate me about my sumo fandom. And they wanted to, you know, qualify that as much as they possibly could and understand what was interesting for me about coming to Fukuoka and who my favorite rikishi was and, you know, some of the sumo techniques. So they kind of put me through the ringer a little bit, but hopefully for people who are watching in Fukuoka Airport Arrivals Hall or will be watching on Channel 7 here in Japan, they'll give me some respect, I hope.
Yeah, when you get to immigration, they want to know what you're doing in Japan, you can just hand them a clip of that video.
Yeah, right, exactly. I'm a big sumo fan. Did you guys see me on Channel 7?
Come on. So Fukuoka is a great city, absolutely lovely place. Tell me a little bit about your adventures in Fukuoka before we get down to the sumo.
Yeah, it's been cool. Really nice people here. As I mentioned in a post I did earlier this week on the site, I feel like maybe compared to some other cities in Japan and some of the other Basho cities like Nagoya even, it kind of over-indexes on shopping. So there's a lot of shopping, there's a lot of food, there's a lot of really nice people. You know, I've been able to experience the tonkatsu ramen, which has been fantastic. They actually have a place here called Ramen Stadium, which is a little kitschy, I suppose. But you know,
what, kitschy stuff in Japan?
Yeah, who knew, right? Like, who would expect that?
I love you, yeah, Japan. I love you.
It's super, super cool, super fun. You know, as everybody says, everybody who comes here, and even some of the people that I've met along the way, you know, it's just a city that's full of these warm, really friendly people who are so enthusiastic and happy that you've chosen to come here, and for whatever reason, but you know, for people to come and experience the sumo in their city, I think they're really happy about that as well.
All right, so now you've been to all four Basho locations, the first of Team Tachi-Eye to mark that accomplishment. How would you
compare that?
What's that?
I said I was not aware of that.
You are. If we gamified it, we'd give you this little magic like four lobe thing that says I did it.
So cool.
But so compare a little bit. You've actually been into the venue, into the Kokusai Center. Compare from inside the difference between Fukuoka Kokugi-kan and the Aeon Center.
Yeah, it's a small venue, so you're really close to the action everywhere. Literally, no matter what seat you have and what service you use to get your seats, I don't think you're going to be disappointed with the view from any of those seats. I met some folks from Hawaii today who've actually never been to Kokugi-kan, and they come over to Fukuoka all the time, and they love it because the people are amazing, the venue's amazing. I think that... where it's a very different experience. If you're someone who's been to Tokyo, Kokugi-kan it's a purpose-built venue for sumo. There's a lot of places to get snacks or to buy merch or to do activities. There's a sumo museum. That's not stuff that you're going to find here. And this is, an exhibition hall that has six or seven stands in the entire place for all of the above. What they have done, which I think is really good, is they've brought in food trucks outside, which you can, they're kind of separated off. So because there's not a lot of places in the venue for food, they have a variety of different things that you can experience. You can go get, Neapolitan style pizza and bring that into the venue, and katsu and ice cream and things like that. But the trade-off in not having so many amenities to work with is that you have this access to the wrestlers that you don't really have anywhere else because they're walking down the same hallways that you are to kind of get warmed up and to go into the venue. And I was walking to my seat yesterday. I tweeted about it as kind of a joke, like, yo, Chiyono Kuni, get out of the way, man. Like, I'm trying to get to my seat. But you're going to be walking past the guys that you see on NHK all the time, just warming up, in the stairwells or, when they walk into the venue, they walk right in the front door and security just kind of has to move everybody out of the way because, Oyama's coming through, or someone like that. So they use all the same spaces that you do as a fan. And, as you're walking in, I wanted to see if I could see Uruk before he went out.
Yeah.
And, people were just lining up to take pictures of him. And, everybody just is very respectful of the space that the rich need. But, it's a more kind of casual setting, I think, compared to Kokugi-kan.
So talking about Ura, how does he... You saw him fight on day six. From video, it looks like he's really overwhelming his opponents. What was the reaction in the Kokugi-kan? What was the reaction in the venue there in Fukuoka?
Yeah, I think the reaction was big enough that they probably heard it in the Kokugi-kan. there's no doubt that he's someone who's beloved by sumo fans everywhere, up and down the Banzuke. No matter who it is that people are rooting for, I think people are looking out for his results and they want to see him do well. And as I mentioned, I went down and was kind of hanging out outside the Shitakubeya where, the dressing room. And I wanted to see him come out and see if I could snap a photo. And there were probably a couple dozen people who had the same idea. And Ura came out and kind of did a turn, but went straight down the tunnel, And he's not entertaining the spectacle of Ura at Sandame level at
no
all.
Fansa?
Fans,
but, no Fansa? No Fansa from Ura? Come on.
I know, man. But, he comes out, he's got his little pink towel, and he's ready to go. And there's no fuss there. So he went out.
I'm sorry. I'm going to stop you there. There's no fuss there. This seems to be the approach that he has right now, is that he's very workmanly going about dispatching these people in a proper but, respectful manner. It's like, I don't have anything against you there, Fatso Fuji, but you're in my way. Have a nice day.
Well, there's also no sense that he's coming out and he's dispatching these guys with a workmanlike yorikiri, though. I mean, he comes out and he grabs the guy by the leg and picks him up and carries him and then, like, throws him on the floor.
It is Ura, after all. We expect.
Yeah, and he is going about his business, but it's not exactly like he's winning with these basic techniques. He's very true to himself, and he's still delivering great entertainment value, even at, whatever he is, Sunday May 33 or whatever it is. It's a breath of fresh air. And, I'm never going to be one of these people that's, elitist about like, I only show up when it's Juryo time or whatever. But like, there's a gap in quality between the sumo that he delivers and most of what you're going to see, in that level down there in the fourth division, the fifth division, early in the morning or what have you.
So I'll admit, I've been to Kyushu, though not during sumo time myself. And the food is off the charts down there. Tell us a little bit about your culinary adventures down in that western city.
Yeah, so there's an app that I referenced on the site earlier this week called Ramen Beast, and I heard a lot about Hakata-style tonkotsu ramen before I came here. There's a lot of brands that I think their genesis is in this region that people who come to Japan or who are interested in ramen might be aware of, like Ichiran, or I don't know if Ipudo is its genesis is in this region, though it wouldn't surprise me. But Ramen Beast is really cool because this guy who I think is featured on NHK, and he goes around, he's an American guy, he goes around Japan and basically just has been to like thousands and thousands of ramen restaurants. So you can open the app and go, what's around me that's really good? And you can get something that is unique and local. So I went to a place called Hakata Isu, and I got my first tonkatsu ramen in the Hakata region there.
Yep.
Which was tremendous. And I went to this place today, which I didn't write about yet on the site, but it's called Genki Ippai, and there's absolutely no sign for this restaurant, you only know that it's open if they've hung a blue bucket outside. That's it. That's the only signal that you get.
Nice.
When you come down the street, it's crazy. Like, you might see like two or three people, maybe there's a little line hanging out outside, but you have to know what it is, otherwise you wouldn't be able to get in there. So so that was cool. That was quite close to the venue, actually, so it worked out fine. But saw that, checked out a really good sushi spot called Hyotan, quite near the Tenjin area. Obviously there are the yatai. I actually went to a donut yatai tonight, which was kind of crazy. But there's a really good, actually you wouldn't think about this. I've never really thought about this in connection with Japan, but there's a really good Christmas market.
Oh, yeah. Fuka. No, it's all the trappings of Christmas, at least in modern Japan, are amplified, and it's really kind of fun.
Yeah, so it's one of those things that if you're thinking about coming to the city for sumo, there are all these really cool, not only food experiences and, obviously like we talked about earlier, ramen stadium or what have you, but, there are things like that, like the Christmas market that you can do that add a little color and a little flavor to the trip and all the shopping and everything else.
So, do people recognize you as a world famous podcast star?
I want to give a shout out to, a commenter from the site, James Zoo. James, who's a guy from the UK, who found me when I was sitting in the venue on day six. He came over and said, "Are you Josh?" And I was like, "Yeah." And he's like, "All right, I watched Tachi Eye podcast." So it's cool. So
thank you.
Hi, James.
Thank you for watching the podcast.
Thanks for supporting us. He's following along with the tips. And it was kind of cool. I mean, it's great. There are people today, there was someone who I was listening to, who I kind of overheard today in the venue, said, you know, they refer to this guy, Ichinojo, as the Mongolian behemoth. And I was like, I think that's someone who's been reading some of Bruce's articles on this type. So I think there are quite a few Tachi Eye readers who are hanging out at Sumo who've been kind of following along with the coverage. But yeah, I was able to meet James, and yeah, hopefully we'll meet a few more folks, you know, when we're up in Tokyo in January.
Very cool. So let's talk a little bit about the Basho. Were you disappointed to show up and have absolutely no Yokozuna doing anything?
Yeah, I think so, because by the time I got there on day six, obviously Kisunosato was Kyuju already. I'll say a couple things about this, you know. Two things. I'll go a little bit off on a tangent first. I don't want to be all, you know, holier than thou, because I caught a bit of flack, I think, when I said something similar to this on the site earlier this year. But, like, a lot of people who come to Sumo, you know, they get their tickets. A lot of people, you know, we've driven people to buy their tickets from folks like Buy Sumo Tickets, and the tickets come in blocks. And one of the things that site does, I think, that's really amazing is, you know, you buy your tickets, whether you're a first-time buyer or you bought from them 10 times, every time you do your order, they send you this document that's like, Here's how Sumo works. Not a lot of people read that guide. It seems like no one reads that guide. Read the guide. People read, like, it's for your benefit. They put so much work into it, and it's amazing. And I am so lucky to meet so many people from around the world, you know, and I'm happy to kind of explain things to people who want to know, which I think is super cool, that we kind of get to share our interests with all these people. But, you know, there are a lot of folks who show up and kind of have a less respectful interpretation, I think, of a lot of the Shinto rituals.
Yep.
And
interesting.
The reason why I bring that up in particular without, you know, trying to come over all preachy is, like, one of the greatest rituals, as we know, is the Yokozuna Doyo Iri, you know, the ring entering ceremony. And I think that, you know, whether it's something that you've read up on, or, you know, there's folks in the venue who are kind of talking about, here's what this is, and here's why they're doing that, and they're stomping on the ground and throwing the salt, and they're doing the whole thing, and here's why. It's like, it's one of the most quintessential moments, I think, of a basho. I think it's almost, in some cases, more compelling as a moment than, like, Hakuho beats, you know, Takanoiwa or, you know, or whatever, the match is over in, like, 3 seconds.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, it's one of those things that, you know, it's an occasion in the day. It's a critical part of the Honbasho that when there's no Yokozuna, you kind of feel like it's an incomplete experience.
Yeah.
The best way I can describe it is, like, it kind of lends so much gravity to the occasion. Sometimes you forget the matches, but you'll always remember seeing the great Yokozuna Hakuho or whoever. And so I kind of feel for folks that come and see their, you know, their first sumo match, and
they don't have it.
So, exactly, and they don't have that experience.
And if they've never seen it before, they're not even aware that they've missed something
right.
Important. Yeah, the ceremonial aspects of sumo are a part of what helps set it aside as a sport, especially in Western eyes. It's like, you know, what are they doing right now? Well, this is, the heritage of sumo, where it's part festival, part sporting event, is lost when you lose some of the biggest ceremonial elements from each day on the tournament. So, so you went to day six and day seven. So you got to see, you were in the arena when Shohozan and Koto Shogiku tore it apart. What was it like to be there when that was happening? Because, frankly, I thought the microphones were going to overload.
What a match, right? This is what I was looking forward to, you know, the reception for all the local guys. Obviously, you can include Yoshikaze in that category. I think Shodai might be from the general region as well. though he doesn't necessarily inspire, I don't think, the same kind of fervor as, you know, a hero like Kota Shogiku's former Ozeki. And as I said, I don't really think that you could have drawn it up any better than on day six to come in and see Kota Shogiku against Shohozan, which is two guys who are veterans, they're local, and they have a clash of styles, right? Kota Shogiku, as you said, former Ozeki, and he's a Mawashi guy, and he's got the hug and chug, which, by the way, is a phrase which we've used on the site for a long time. I'm certainly not going to take credit for it. It might be you. But I did hear Murray on NHK use that phrase the other day, possibly with respect to someone else. I don't think it was Kota Shogiku, but I thought that was funny.
I have it on reasonable authority that those guys do at least occasionally look at the site. So if Murray, if you used a phrase that is endemic to Tachi Ai, we are deeply honored.
Yeah, it's that would be. I'm just gonna have to coin some more phrases and we're just gonna have to come up with ridiculous stuff, and then we'll see what actually makes it slip its way into the show. We'll see how much influence we can kind of create over that, perhaps.
So the one thing I've noticed, though, on the telecast, not so much the NHK highlight reels, who always seem to have a different audio mix, but specifically the NHK G feed, is just how loud it is. It's a huge difference. I mean, there's a big difference between watching on video and being in the Kokugi-kan, is that the audio is much more live. But is it really loud in the venue when there's a match going on?
That was probably the first match yesterday where I thought it was like, okay, now we're kind of getting a representation of how people feel about these guys. You know, Kota Shogiku, as we've established, is a hero, but one of the things about Shohozan is we call him Big Gun Shohozan, and you know, this is a street fighter, and it's a cage match, and it's a brawl, you know, whenever he's involved, and you know, he's a big pusher thruster, and he's got this style that is a little bit rough and ready. He's got this run and gun kind of attitude sometimes. You don't really see him smile very often, and his sumo is a reflection, I think, of that, you know. And so that atmosphere in the venue really matched that clash of styles and that energy that both of these guys bring. And that, like I said, it was really the first time that it kind of kicked off like that in there. And then, as you referenced, you kind of hope that the quality of the match lives up, you know, to the billing. And boy, did it ever.
Some of the best sumo I've seen from those two guys, regardless of who they're fighting, in quite a long time. They were trading styles on each other, which was impressive.
Yeah.
And they were trading off who was sort of calling the tune, and neither one of them could close the deal. It was really some brilliant sumo.
It was incredible. I mean, it's one of those things, I've probably said this a few times yesterday, but sometimes you see a match and you go, oh, that's worth the price of admission right there.
Yeah.
And that's one of those matches for me. And you don't know when it's going to come. And the interesting thing about those two guys, if you look at it and you look at the stats and the history, neither of them really have a brilliant record fighting in front of their home fans. But it almost doesn't matter because, you know, they're delivering the entertainment and the excitement that these people want to see.
So who else drew big reactions or reactions that you said, out of some of the Rikishi that our fans, readers, and watchers might be familiar with?
Enho is getting a lot of the same fans as Ura, I think.
Yeah.
Everyone loves him, women and men. A lot of men shouting for Enho, which is different than someone like Endo, for example. It's not the same fan base. So I think it's great because it's a very broad audience of people that are really excited about Enho. These guys, I think, get that broader fan base because they're so exciting to watch. Enho was fantastic both days that I was there this week. He did pull a little bit of a Henka on day seven. From where I sat, it wasn't really clear whether it was like a Haruma Fuji-style hit and shift or it was more cynical, like maybe from stablemate Ishiura, but he's got a big bag of tricks, and you don't really know what he's going to come out with. And people were really screaming for him, you know, whether it was at the Doyo Iri for Juryo or, you know, it was actually when it was his time to get up on the Doyo, people were really excited about him. So I think he's, you know, we've talked about him for a while as someone who's one to watch, but he's not really one to watch anymore. He's arrived.
Yeah, he has. He has. And apologies to some of our followers. We think that you'll see him in the NHK highlight reel soon. He is, if he continues to win, he will make his Makauchi debut probably sometime in 2019. And you're not ready for how much excitement this guy brings to the dojo. It's going to be a good time. If you clearly you have access to YouTube because you're watching us there, go look for some videos of Enho matches. You will find some really remarkable sumo. So. I would be remiss if we didn't dive into some discussion about the tournament, because we're more or less right at the halfway point now. And boy, what a crazy freaking mess this tournament is from a sort of logical order and structure of how you would expect, given the Banzuke and everyone's health, to unfold. And instead, we've got this sort of wild unpredictability. We've got anyone being able to lose, I won't say to win, but to lose on any given day. You have Nishikigi defeating Goedo, for which I am forever, how should we say, diminished. Thoughts about that? And recipes for, never mind.
There's no recipe.
Just going to have to wing it.
It's ridiculous. We sat here beforehand and we said, you know, it's going to be carnage. It's going to be chaos. You know, there's these guys who are going to be in the Joijin, right, which is that kind of – I mean, it's a wildly fluctuating area of the Banzuke, but it's that the sort of top section of the rank and filers, the Maegashira ranks, who kind of get thrown in at the deep end fighting Yokozuna and the Ozeki and just get trampled. And which is what happened the last time out.
Aki was a complete bloodbath for those guys.
It wasn't expected more of the same because we saw these names up there. Like, you know, to your point, Nishikigi, what's he doing there? I mean, he's a guy who's famous for the fact that he can't even see past the edge of the dojo. His eyesight's so bad. And, you know, what's going to happen to him when he comes up against these guys like Goedo, you know, who are all speed and fast and the fury and everything else?
What's going to happen?
What's going to happen to Yuden? You know, Yuden has had some trouble, but today he beats Takayasu, and not in a fluky way. You know, he had a game plan he stuck to and he won. So it's kind of remarkable. To your point that you know, big names can kind of conspire to lose to folks that maybe beforehand we haven't really given much of a chance.
Well, so I think it's endemic of the trend that we've been following for the past couple of years is that a number of these headliner or kanban rikishi are, you know, they're past the best of their health and the best of their strength for the most part, and you've got this new crop that is fighting for its place, and that's one of the great themes behind sumo, is that nobody is given anything for the most part. You have to take it from somebody else. And so it is very Darwinistic, very much survival of the fittest. And you see young rikishi like Taka Keisho, who a year ago we knew was going to turn into something. He's really starting to come into his own now. And on any given day, he could probably beat anyone on the Banzuke at this point. Thoughts? Does he get much reaction in the venue there, or is it pretty much, hey, wow, look, a bowling ball with legs?
Well, to your first point, Bruce, you've kind of been the guy with 400 tin cans of food and 3,000 rolls of toilet paper in the bunker. Like, doom is coming, you know, beware. It hasn't really happened for a year, and now we're seeing it. Now it's happened, and you know, I suspect a few people in sumo might need some of that toilet paper, but he's got an amazing reaction. You know, I was sitting with an interesting fellow from a local fellow yesterday, and I joked on Twitter. I was like, Taka Keisho, more like Taka Yusho. That's what's going to happen here. It's his moment. You know, he's kind of seeing that he's got an opportunity, and the guy in the venue is like, yeah, Taka Yusho. You know, it's in time. And there is that fearlessness. I think it kind of reminds me sometimes. You know, I make a lot of analogies to soccer, to football, but you know, you have these characters that kind of come along, and they're, when they're younger and they're more sort of mercurial and they're not afraid of anybody, they sort of can get better results almost than they will later in their career. Yep. When they're a little more polished. And Taka Keisho is one of these guys that he's coming, he doesn't care about, you know, the established order and the way that you beat someone, decorum in the ring, all this kind of stuff. He's just doing his thing. And I think he senses and sees an opportunity where, you know, he can get in there and you know, upset that order, you know, and fair play to him. Because, you know, whether it's mental reasons, and, you know, we'll talk about Takayumi in a minute, but, yeah. You know, he's been able to get up there and display consistent sumo. Okay, so he lost today to Takayumi, and I couldn't really see from where I was. I haven't watched it back yet. There was a mono-e afterwards, yeah. And I think there was a question of, you know, did someone touch a top knot or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, with all the presumptive favorites continuing to lose, despite that today, I think he's hanging on there. He displays good sumo. You know, and we talked about in one of the comment threads earlier this week, you know, if someone wins this tournament, will they have an asterisk next to their name? But if he won it, he beat Kisuno Sato. He beat the Yokozuna. Yeah. So I don't know that you could put an asterisk next to his name. I think it's too early to say that you know, he's the guy in the Yusho race right now. But he's had the hardest possible schedule that anyone could have. As a Komusubi who's already faced the Yokozuna, he's come through it. He's 6-1, and he goes into the second week as someone who is a big name for sure.
Well, week two is all going to be about endurance, and Taka Keisho has shown some solid endurance in prior basho. So he's part of a group of three rikishi who are sitting at one loss. Sorry, we're not spoiler free. This incorporates the day seven results, and day seven is usually when we start talking about the leaderboard. So we have Taka Keisho, Daisho, and Taka Keisho's buddy Onosho, all sitting at 6-1. This is a wacky slate to head into the middle day. We only have one Ozeki who's sitting at two losses. The other Ozeki are sitting at four losses and three losses each. Mm-hmm. So let's I'll bring it up. Should we be worrying about Tochi Noshin?
Yes.
How did he look?
Interesting thing, as you said, we're heading into day eight, right? So mm-hmm. I mean, this will be outdated before most people even hear this. But what isn't outdated, I think, is that when he's not at 100% health, people know what his go-to move is going to be. And if they can block that left hand,
yep.
It's like a 50-50 shot. You know, his odds of being able to pull off the winner a lot lower. You know, his chances of being able to pull off the winner are a lot lower. And so, you know, guys are thinking, well, okay, if I can stop that, I've got a chance. Now, if you go back to what makes an Ozeki great or a Yokozuna great, we were talking about Tochi Noshin not long ago, a conversation for a guy who could potentially be the next Yokozuna. You know, the competition doesn't necessarily always believe that they've got a chance against them. There's this surprise element if one of these guys win, and you can see it sometimes. You can see when Hakuho or, you know, when a Harma Fuji or whoever, you know, would go and just blow a guy away. Well, okay, we expected that, or, you know, whatever. You can see what happens when he just destroys someone. You know, today he was up against Yoshikaze, who usually is fearless, right? Usually. But I think a lot of folks think they can get at Tochi Noshin right now, his current physical condition. And so I think that's an issue for him. I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up Katabon, but I think it's probably an edge case. He could come out of it with eight wins, maybe kind of turns it around and gets nine wins. But I said before the tournament, I expected this to be an Ozeki Yusho. And he's certainly not in that conversation. Not right now.
The only one who's really in range is Takayasu, and that surprise loss today to Ryuden kind of makes you scratch your head and go, okay, what's wrong with the big fuzzy? So before we head out, any further comments on Fukuoka or the Kyushu Basho? I mean, that's you've kind of, for me, you're kind of living the dream. I spent almost a year in Western Japan. Love the place, love the people, love the food. I hope to go back someday. But thoughts about your adventure?
Yeah, it's been amazing. It's when we talk about seeing all of the different cities that host one of these competitions, you know, they all have their different flavor. Tokyo is Kokugikan is the headquarters of sumo. It's a very special place. But that isn't to say that these other places around the country, you know, especially Nagoya and Fukuoka, that have a very different atmosphere, are also very special in the experience that they deliver as well. I think what's going to be interesting this time is, you know, we just talked about, there's all these guys who have a glorious opportunity, and they're kind of, you know, I don't want to quite say frittering it away, but you know, when you talk about opening the door for someone like Daisho to be at the head of the leaderboard, you're like, where is Takayasu? Where is Mitakeyumi? Where is all these guys?
Right.
It brings a different kind of flavor and different element to the experience. And so, you know, it's a very curious atmosphere, I think, in there, because, you know, it's a competition that's happening right now here in Fukuoka without really any kind of presumptive favorite.
Yes.
Which I think gives it a different atmosphere when you're in the arena.
Great. Josh, thank you very much for staying up late talking to us here and all the fans and viewers and followers of Tachi Eye. I hope the rest of your trip in Japan goes wonderfully well.
Thanking you, sir.
Hey, no problem. And everyone, thanks for watching this little podcast. And remember, for sumo, it's Tachi Eye.